Well, hello everyone, and welcome to another one of these interviews. I am pleased to be joined today by P.F. Young. How are you doing, sir?
I'm doing well, Nima. Thank you for having me.
Now, what I just mentioned on a stream casually that you were coming on, and it was interesting to see the reaction of the chat, because some people were like, "Oh yeah, P.F. Young is based," and other people were like, "He's just a liberal." And other people were like, so that made me at least interested. How, if you can, and I know this is a very difficult question, sum up where you've kind of arrived in current year in 2026.
Yeah, the meme of my channel is dark centrism, the meme, the brand, whatever you want to call it. And it's obviously pulling from the dark MAGA, dark woke, dark whatever, dark plus some concept is mimetically fit idea nowadays. But basically, the idea is very simple. It's my belief is the far right are correct on some issues some of the time, and the far left are correct on some issues some of the time, and even the spineless fence-sitting moderates are correct on some issues some of the time. And on the one hand, that is perhaps the most common sense view that your average person already believes. It's sort of like the midwit meme where, you know, you have the low IQ take, the moderately intelligent, and then the high IQ take, which is the same as the low IQ take. It's like dark centrism is just a online, you know, explanation of something that most people already know is correct intuitively, which is, yeah, the, you know, Nick Fuentes says some true things. That's why he has a following. Hassan Piker says some true things. That's why he has a following. Ezra Klein, you know, says some true things in abundance and all that. And so dark centrism, you know, could basically boil down to, if you want to defeat your ideological enemies, rob them of their only good talking points and incorporate those talking points in your own worldview. And so moderate centrists, you know, moderates are very, well, extremism equals bad. We have to marginalize the extremes. And for me, dark centrism is more about, no, I will talk to and contend with and defend and support extremists when they're right. And then I will criticize them loudly when they're wrong, instead of just saying, oh, well, this person said extreme things or believes extreme things, therefore bad. It's like the only reason extremists have power or have influence is because the moderate center has allowed problems to grow and fester. And so that's, I would say that's more or less the gist of dark centrism. I mean, practically, it does mean aligning with the side that is out of balance. So if there's always a pendulum or a scale that needs to be in balance to keep a society optimally, you know, functioning between conservatives and progressives in the broadest sense or whatever, then a dark centrist is willing to actually align themselves with the side that's out of balance. So like right now, I would say I'm culturally right wing, just straight up. I think the average person is more negatively impacted by the excesses of left-wing ideology. If you talk about like the average milieu in the culture, you know, like the sort of hyper-materialist, hyper-individualist, which is a very left-wing, you know, my body, my choice type thing, that's the pathologies of left-wing ideology are more, I would say, yeah, they influence the average person more. The right-wing degeneracy is on the rise. Make no mistake about it. You've seen that clip of that one, like 11-year-old at a baseball game talking to Sneeko.
I haven't.
It went. You know who Sneeko is, right?
I'm aware. I'm aware of his.
Okay.
I know. I could probably pick him out of a, you know. A mugshot.
He's a right-wing. He's right-wing, broadly speaking. Let's say whatever that means anymore. And basically a 12-year-old comes up, or what, some 13-year-old comes up to him at a baseball game who's a fan of his, and he's like, Sneeko, what's up? Fuck the women. And it's just like, what is going on? You talk about the degeneration of the social fabric. It's like, if you're on the right and you can't call that behavior degenerate, then the right has no business using that word. So I don't have, I certainly would never throw my lot in with the right or the left. I mean, I am a centrist in that. I don't commit to extreme ideological positions, but I recognize the truth when they are in possession of it. So that's more or less the gist of it, I would say.
Kind of interesting. I mean, I for my sins, when you said dark centrism, you know, one of the things I do on this channel and one of the things I'm known for, among many other things, is for my real interest in former Prime Minister Tony Blair, right?
Okay.
Tony Blair. And my nickname for him is the Dark Lord, because I believe that Tony Blair has basically secretly become a post-liberal, post-democratic, almost autocratic. Like, I think Tony Blair basically agrees with things like elite theory and various other things. And also that he understands that in order to kind of stop populism, right, and its worst excesses, the system actually needs to fix the problems, right? So he spent years now saying, look, you're going to have to sort out immigration. You're going to have to sort out, like, there's no point extolling the virtues of the system if it doesn't work. It actually has to deliver, right? The system, the managerial state has to deliver. It has to be efficient. It has to actually work. So I've always been, I think there's a lot of truth to what Tony Blair says, even though, especially in this country, on the left and on the right, he is absolutely demonized. He's one of the most hated people in this country and possibly the world. And yet I still think he's got things worth saying.
Sure. Oh yeah.
By the same token, I've also done some videos where I've read Stalin, for example. Now, again, to a certain type of right winger, this is like heresy. What, Stalin? He was the one who killed millions of people, blah, blah, blah.
Yep.
But the way I'm looking at it is all of these people had some insight into the political process, into power, into various things. And so I've been kind of building up, quietly. You want to be like a better Marxist than the Marxists. Know the bit Marxism better than the Marxists do. In an ideal world, I could go into a room of Blairites and blend in because I know all the talking points and I also understand how they think. And then also the same on the right. I have some caveats though. I have come to believe that there are some, that not all worldviews are created equal. And there is one worldview that is completely worthless. And I'm going to test this out on you, what you have to say. The basic worldview of the post-war center-right, mainstream conservatism in both America and in Britain, is almost entirely worthless and needs to be smashed into a million pieces. You know, the woke, even the woke left, can occasionally say something insightful by accident, or they can stumble on the truth, or they can actually have a good point sometimes. So can a Marxist, so can the far right, as you said, so can Tony Blair. But the standard kind of view of like your average GOP politician or conservative MP is almost entirely built on lies and veneration of people who don't deserve veneration, like Winston Churchill, and basically their entire worldview is crap. So even though I'm kind of with you, like I like to be able to see the strengths of every school and even, play around with those ideas, I've come to the view that there's one view that's worse than all the others. And unfortunately, it's the one that
most dominant,
most average like MAGA voters would go for, for example,
Okay, well, I'll say a couple things. First off, I agree not all worldviews are created equal. That is absolutely the case. I mean, even like I said, Nick Fuentes and Hassan were two extremes. Like, I mean, I don't watch that much Hassan because he's not that intelligent, whereas at least Nick Fuentes is intelligent. So I think Nick Fuentes, I see Nick Fuentes make good takes more often than Hassan. There's still plenty of pathology in the Fuentes worldview. But yeah. So just right off the bat, it's not far left and far right are equal per se. It also depends on the context. Second, part of the primary motivation of the how I see things is not necessarily ideological, and that I'm trying to fit all these ideological puzzle pieces together. It's more psychological. So really, the assumption is, look, if someone is a rational or what the closest thing to rational that a human being can be, which is ultimately not very rational, people arrive at their worldview for valid reasons, like sort of by definition. They see things, they become indoctrinated, whatever. And so really what I'm trying to do is to activate the whatever truth is in their worldview, to acknowledge that up front and sort of aggressively to then open their mind to point out that, yes, the post-war consensus is a bastardized pathological religion. The most viewed video on my channel is called The Collapse of a Secular Religion, and it's outlining this, the exact concept. So, but to your point, to steel man it, I mean, in the simplest sense, anti-Semitism, when we actually are defining it properly and not abusing the word like we've done with racism or homophobia or anything else, is bad. And, you know, if you grew up in a culture like I did where, you know, in 6th, 7th, 8th grade or sooner, you watch Diary of Anne Frank, you learn about World War II, every evil character in your cultural milieu is a Nazi. It's perfectly reasonable that you would come out sort of with a religious commitment to anti-Semitism is the most real evil that has ever existed. Because Satan and religion, that's what, you know, we're past that. The true guiding principle of morality is anti-Semitism and the Holocaust being the ultimate forms of evil, Hitler, so on and so forth. So, like, you know, that's sort of the moral basis of the post-war consensus. Then there's the whole Bretton Woods and, you know, kind of the liberal ideology that follows that. But like psychologically, that's probably the most compelling thing, again, because, you know, Christians who get indoctrinated, and I don't necessarily mean that as a bad word, like it's good to have indoctrination and cultural programming for the right ideas. Obviously that's what you do to children because they're not free thinkers. You give them programming ahead of time. You know, someone who's grown up their whole life in a Christian church, they've seen the Passion of the Christ when they're young, they're going to have a certain attitude that is, they've arrived at those, their opinion and beliefs for valid and understandable psychological reasons. And so that's the steel man of the post-war consensus. Like, it's not great when you have an excess of the genuinely anti-Semitic nonsense.
I didn't really have that issue in mind, to be honest. What I was thinking of was more, I mean, yes, it is a very central to that whole worldview. I mean, I made a video, one of my most viewed videos ever was called The Boomer Truth Regime. I mean, it's about 6 years old now, that video, but The Boomer Truth Regime, as I defined it, was, you know, the ultimate evil in the world is Hitler, or the ultimate good is Winston Churchill, right, doing that.
Yeah, yeah.
And so that's the kind of negative side of it, because if you're on the right in the kind of the Boomer Truth Regime, then basically what you're fighting for is to be the always Churchill. You're basically just fighting Hitler wherever you see him,
yes,
ever. Okay. And that's why every enemy, including Stalin, including, you know, Saddam Hussein, etc., has been Hitler. That's the negative side of it. But then the positive ideology, if you want, of the Boomer Truth Regime, you know, alongside Winston Churchill doing that, you've got John Lennon also doing that. And it's John Lennon's Imagine. It's John Lennon. I guess what you'd call the ideology of unlimited individual self-expression.
Oh,
right. Which is also totally. It's extremely central to the Boomer Truth Regime. So any step away from unlimited individual self-expression, any restriction you want to put on that is automatically, it's automatically Hitler. Do not collect $200, go directly to jail, do not pass go, right? That is it in a nutshell. So you don't even need to get to, you know, anti-Semitism or any of that sort of stuff, because even before you get to any of that stuff, you know, the Boomer Truth regime is actually very bristle and the parameters of what you're allowed to do and say when it comes to those things are very, very small. That's kind of what I was getting at. When I was saying, well, you know, this what the center right believe, because the biggest defenders of that are actually the center right. The left given up defending that a long time ago. In fact, the left have already deconstructed it 20 years ago, whereas the right are just, you know, carrying the water for this ailing truth regime. I'll just put it that way. Yeah.
I mean, this is why I'm very sympathetic to the term post-liberal. And I like Patrick Deneen. Do you know the distributist, Dave Green?
Yeah, I know him.
Okay, yeah, I was going to say, I imagine you would appreciate a lot of his work. He's certainly changed my mind on a lot of things. Yeah, the elevation of individual liberty as the highest value in the hierarchy of values, to put it in a Petersonian sense. I should say, the single biggest influence on my thinking, I'm 29, has been OG, old school Jordan Peterson, pre-Daily Wire Jordan Peterson. And I want to be very clear, there's a big distinction between pre-Daily Wire Jordan Peterson and post-Daily Wire Jordan Peterson. But, you know, his conception, you know, he talks about the term hierarchy of values. It's like, yeah, within liberalism, the highest value is individual autonomy, individual freedom. Freedom, freedom, freedom. What makes America great? Freedom, freedom, freedom. And that's demented, because that just devolves into hedonism and unmoored, self-expression, whatever, you know. Well, self-expression is Bonnie Blue. It is funny. Someone said Bonnie Blue is a right-wing performance artist. And I don't know if she's consciously that, but she is functionally that, exactly. Like, it's one of these interesting things about reality, is that truth always reconciles. Truth always has self-correcting mechanisms, in that if you have a society that's out of whack, if you have a large enough population, there's enough variability in people's psychology that you will always have a few crazy extreme people who, when there is a ridiculous rule or a ridiculous norm, there will always be individuals who do the sort of performance artist to show how ridiculous it is. Sort of like with the pronoun thing. There was this one, or, you know, just gender fluidity and all that. There were all these men who would go to like a women's networking event and just claim that they're non-binary or whatever or something, as like a demonstration of the ridiculousness of the rule. Most people psychologically are just, you know, we won't do that. I might do that. But there's always enough. There's always that's you need some crazies in your society to do that, so that when the rules become oppressive or whatever, they can demonstrate the absurdity of it, even though at great cost to themselves. So yeah, Bonnie Blue is an expression of that. Have you seen the most recent thing that's going on Twitter, where she's pregnant and she's having her?
No, I have left Twitter. So there.
Oh, that's right. Yes, recently. Yes. Okay, that's fair. Well, I'll just be, broadly speaking, Bonnie Blue is engaging in the most degenerate, immoral, offensive, even to left-wing hyper-feminist liberals behavior. She's pregnant and she's continuing to do the thing that she is known for, even while she is pregnant with a child. So anyway, but that is sort of the reductio ad absurdum of, well, this is what happens when you elevate freedom to the highest value. And then there's the whole, you know, positive freedom versus negative freedom debate of like, well, I'm a classical liberal, if by classical liberal you mean like the classical virtues, which is what it was originally intended. But that's not how it operates today. And ironically, yeah, the progressive left is like, hyper-wokeism is a manifestation of hyper-individualism. It's all about me. There is no objective truth. It's my truth overall. And so, yeah, the boomer worldview has certainly facilitated it. And, the reason I bring up the anti-Semitism and Hitler is because I do think that is the emotional and psychological core. That's the moral and emotional grounding that then the ideological framework is built in. Like you said, everyone who disagrees with that is Hitler.
Yeah. No, I would agree. But you see, there are certain truths that people don't want to admit, right? So, for example, and again, what you're saying about degeneracy on the right, this also exists, right? So I can say something like, well, the fact of the matter is that people need guidance. They need moral guidance, okay? The notion that you're going to just come up with your own moral framework in the course of your life, right? You're just going to figure it out. My truth, right? I'm just going to figure it out. You know, I'm going to come up with, Aristotle and Aquinas all on my own, you know? Is kind of hubristic, it's arrogant. And so I think people need guidance. And also I think that people, most people in most places want guidance. You only have to watch the masses long enough to see that people actually want leadership. Mm-hmm. They want judicious and wise leadership. But you start talking about this and you'll see that people have, and to come back to Jordan Peterson, they have a psychological reactance because everybody's got this thing. Well, who are you to tell me what to do? Not me in particular. Who is anybody to tell me?
Yeah, yeah.
Who are you to judge me? Do you remember Jerry Springer? I'll do what I want. You know, do you remember all of that? And it's like, well, okay, but how do we overcome, I guess you'd call it narcissism or ego, like how do you overcome that inbuilt response that people are basically now anti any sort of authority, by which I mean they just rebel for the sake of it, even if it's somebody telling them, look, well, you know, if you eat that third burger, you are going to be fat, you know, or, you know, you probably shouldn't have golden showers if you're pregnant, you know, or whatever.
Yeah, I had I moderated a conversation between Benjamin Studebaker and Dave Green, and this was one of the topics of, like, there's an inbuilt psychological commitment to liberal democracy, which is this, you know, freedom and individualism as the highest value. How do you get around that? Well, you know, you can think of it in microcosms. It's like, well, why did a bunch of people flock to Jordan Peterson, who was like, you know, he wasn't using the state to force anything, but it was very like, do this, shut up. You know, who are you to say that? Be who you are. That's ridiculous. You're a miserable, depressed creature. Like, what are you talking about? Do this. And people responded to that positively. To what we discussed earlier, it's like, well, the system needs to produce fruits. So if a bunch of people are dispossessed, then they look for guidance. I mean, that's, you know, this is the basic, why do people flock to authoritarianism? It's like, well, there's a problem that's been unaddressed. And then they go and they're willing to sacrifice their freedom to go solve the problem. So, you know, on one point, it's like, well, if you believe that the post-war consensus and the liberal ideology is collapsing and it's not working, that appetite is just going to grow naturally. So it's a kind of a function of time. And I mean, you know, I suppose that's the simplest answer. Like, I mean, you know, with all the stuff going on in, Belfast, and then it was Henry Novak or prior before that, or prior to that. It's like, again, people, the manifestations of unsolved problems will continue to realize and people will reorient themselves around it. I'll tell you, just on the idea of like freedom, my dad is 72, Fox News conservative, like doesn't even like Tucker because he's too... whatever, woke right or something like that. My dad doesn't use those terms, but like likes Bret Baier, normal Fox News, loves Trump. Every time I talk to him about the freedom issue, I say like, you know, I mean, we're too obsessed with freedom. He's like, I totally agree. Everyone's about themselves, blah, blah, blah. Like, I kind of like the idea of universal healthcare. I was against it with Obamacare, but there's some things that make sense in that. And yeah, it is a cultural reprogramming thing of just, look, the problems will have to get to a point where people have to confront them directly. So I don't know if you can necessarily go on a mass convincing campaign. Benjamin Studebaker, he uses this term, he described himself as a vulture socialist, which you can meme that and be like, well, if all socialisms are vultures. Yeah, of course. But his point is what people need to be, what elites need to be, are like vultures sitting on various perches looking out on over the political landscape. And there's this hydra covered in the tar pit, flaying around, and it's dying, and it's in its death rattles. And the various vultures are on the perch, and they can see each other, and they can communicate with each other. And they're just waiting for the Hydra to die, and then they can go in and reorient things. And so the role of elites, the role of minor, you know, mimetic feudal lords of various kinds, would be to prepare, shore up the intellectual, the social infrastructure, so that when things, you know, when there is true chaos, when the religion collapses, there's a plan in place and there's, you know, coordination in terms of, okay, well, how do we get people on board with a positive vision for the a positive vision for the future?
Now, you call social media influencers minor feudal lords.
Yeah.
And this is interesting because the bearded figure behind us that you can see there is Thomas Carlyle, who's known, of course, for coming up with the great man theory of history. One of the things that he talks about is that heroes and hero worship, okay, is absolutely baked into human psychology. There's no getting around it. Now, liberals hate this idea. Liberals hate the idea of the great man, okay? And yet, liberalism, despite itself, manages to, and I think of like your rock star or your pop star or Michael Jackson or Elvis, or like these are all, you know, kind of occupying the space of a Carlylean great man figure. And if you have a look at the behavior of crowds at these sorts of things, you know, the rock star could be a prophet, or he could be a dictator, or it's Hitler again, right? It's something like this. Now, your use of this term, feudal, minor feudal lords, made me think, do you see any potential in social media to bring about any sort of positive change through the influence that these minor feudal lords have? Like, could those feudal lords become a new elite in your view, or is it destined to be decentralized and ineffective and slop, essentially?
That threat is always there. I mean, my opinion on social media is it is Pandora's box. We opened something and, you know, all this cancer came out of it, but something positive did come out of it. And, you know, the old adage is, well, bad ideas spread faster than good ideas, so we're screwed, because social media, just for all the good ideas that come out, bad ideas are tenfold and spread further. It's like, yeah, but the difference is good ideas, if they're actually good, have staying power, right? So bad ideas will fly through the culture, wash over the culture, people will entertain them. You know, it'll cause destruction. But like, if they're genuinely bad, they'll be bad for the people that embody them. Mm-hmm. Not always, but generally. You know, like Hassan Piker's advice about, like, don't try in the workplace. You know, if you're a young guy, don't show up to work, do the bare minimum. It's like, right, okay, live that life and see what happens, compared to like a Jordan Peterson, which is the opposite. And then, you know, over 10 years, mm-hmm. over 10 years, see whose vassals are more successful, Hassan's mm-hmm. or Jordan Peterson's. I mean, it's going to be self-evident. So in that sense, I have some level of optimism in that with algorithms and social media, the potential for mimetic viruses to spread has never been, you know, the potential has never been higher. I mean, the same way that, like, you know, one Chinese guy eating a bat in the wrong wet market in Wuhan can start a plague over the whole world, allegedly, of course. You know, one person making the right articulation of the right idea at the right time can go viral. That can set off a chain reaction. I'm sure everyone watching this can think of like individual instances where, like, this is kind of a, you know, superficial one. But did you ever know the super straight meme? Did you ever hear about that? Basically, it was kind of a superficial thing on TikTok or whatever, where straight people were identifying as super straight, as like a type of sexual identity. Mm-hmm. Which, again, going back to the performance artist pushing back type thing, it's like, okay, you have this growing cancer of the anyone can identify whatever, and yet there's canonical identities, and white men are still white men because they're the ultimate oppressor, so we have to keep them in their category, but everyone else can be self-expressed. Well, the super straight was like a pushback on that. That's just one minor example of that mm-hmm. type of self-corrective mechanism spreading quickly. Mm. So with social media, Yeah, I mean, the so, you know, for people who watch me, the two things that I am known for is the dark centrism kind of political analysis, and then this other pillar is what I call applied sociology, which is basically analyzing the rules of ideological and mimetic warfare. So Sun Tzu, The Art of War, is sort of the seminal text of, you know, military warfare. Don't stretch your supply lines too thin. Always seize the high ground. Never invade Russia in the winter. There are rules to military warfare. I'm aware Sun Tzu didn't say that last one. But if we can acknowledge, look, there's military conflict and there are rules that seem to govern the success of military conflict, then what we can say is, well, there's ideological conflict. There's war between Christian nationalism and progressivism and MAGAism and transhumanism and veganism, whatever. All these different ideological meme complexes are sort of coherent worldviews, and they're like factions on a risk board, and they're at war with each other. And there are rules that govern the success of that. So my whole applied sociology project is kind of analyzing those rules. And one of the concepts, one of the tools, is what I call mimetic feudalism, which to the degree that I am familiar or understand elite theory, I think runs along a similar train, where it's like everyone is a vassal of some feudal lord upstream. And you might not even know who the ultimate feudal lord, you might not even know who's at the top of the hierarchy you're in. So like, an example would be, like in theology, you know, someone goes to church, the average person, their beliefs about Christianity is essentially boils down to, I'm going to imitate what my pastor says because he's my pastor and he's smart and he's proven himself to be admirable and useful in terms of like helping out my marriage or giving me, you know, psychological advice. So I'm going to imitate his beliefs. They don't know that that pastor is a pupil of way further upstream, Thomas Aquinas or all these different very kind of esoteric theologians that engage in like oftentimes hyper-rationalist discourse, you know, is God three parts in one, the Trinity doctrine versus, you know, all these obscure theological debates. So you can think of it as a normal distribution. You know the technology adoption curve, you've ever seen that or heard of that? Yep. You have the innovators, the laggards. Memes are the same way. So you have hyper-rational people refining memes up front, on the front end of the curve. And then they pass from the, you know, idea pioneers to the influencers who then take those memes and spread it to the rest of the population, and it cycles through the population. So priests and pastors are taking complex theological ideas and conveying it to the parish, even though the parish wouldn't even know who Thomas Aquinas was or any of the arguments, right? And you can apply that same framework to Marxism. You know, professors in a university teaching college kids. There's a lot of people who call themselves socialist or Marxist who don't even know what alienation of labor is or historical materialism or any of that, because it's not necessary. But it passes through the meme adoption curve is what I call it. And so mimetic feudalism is essentially modeling that process of like, if Nima influences me in some, you know, along a particular, like, you know, like sloppulism, you can do it with individual terms, like sloppulism is your term. So if I go around and start using the term sloppulism, there's a bunch of people who don't even know who you are, who are now going to be infected by your meme through, I'm the minor vassal to you along this dimension of the term sloppulism. And then I'm spreading that to my vassals. And so you now have a bunch of indirect vassals that you're spreading your meme to through this kind of filtration system of interlocking systems of influence and, you know, status and all that. And you can apply this to everything. You know, Curtis Yarvin and Peter Thiel and J.D. Vance, like, oh, J.D. Vance gave a great speech. Well, you didn't know that Curtis Yarvin is the guy feeding these ideas to him upstream.
No, I mean, I've over the years, I've seen this process play out lots of times. And, you know, certain things which go super mainstream where a small group of people know it started with me, for example. I mean, we had something in this country called Zero Seats. Did you ever hear of that? That was where we wanted to just destroy the Tory party. And I made a bunch of memes, Zero Seats, and that has actually gone worldwide, where people in other countries in other elections make their own Zero Seats posters, and you know, almost none of them will know that it secretly started in this tiny little corner of the internet over here. So it's quite fun to track sometimes where these concepts are, where it goes, whether it accrues power and influence to the actual person, though, you know, only in a mimetic sense. It doesn't actually accrue any, you know, it doesn't actually give anything else to you. But yeah.
Yeah, right. If you're some, you know, 4chan or Reddit mod who nobody knows, and you make a meme and it goes viral, I mean, you could say you're the feudal lord of that meme. But it doesn't afford you power. This is, people have critiqued the term feudalism precisely because of that. Mm-hmm. It's like, well, whoever's at the top of the feudal hierarchy has power as a result of their position. But I'm just more referring to the, you have your feudal lord, your minor vassals, and then their vassals, and that influence filters through that mechanism, and memes filter through that mechanism. You know, and it's like, so to your original question, do I think that there's optimism that they might become the new elite? I think so. I think we're in an interesting point now where I think political coalitions that couldn't have been formed before now have the capacity to form because of social media, like you pointed out, rock stars and, you know, influencers. Like, look, you know, in the past, it was like, okay, you have a few A-list celebrities and then everyone else, B-list and C-list was not that well known. But because of the totally decentralized, fractured information landscape, you know, a B-list celebrity is going to be an A-list for some, or a C-list influencer is going to be an A-list person for someone else. Like, your audience, you know, your core audience is going to put you as like, Nima is the person that has influenced me more than anyone else, even though you're not a worldwide figure. So we do have a much more fractionalized, it's like the Holy Roman Empire patchwork state versus, you know, the Roman Empire, something like that. And so in that sense, coalitions are, the mechanisms by which coalitions can form, instead of like, well, we have to get people on board with the same ideology, we just need to assemble a few individuals together and then their audiences will follow suit. So like if Tucker Carlson and Cenk Uygur and Anna Kasparian get together, like Tucker and Cenk just have to, they just have to negotiate a relationship, and then suddenly their audiences will be more likely to be on board. And then, you know, then all of these sub-influencers can go like, hey, I really like what Cenk and Tucker are doing. I'm going to throw my weight behind this. And like, you know, this is, I don't know, are you a strategy gamer by any chance?
Yeah.
Okay. Do you know Crusader Kings?
Yeah, I love it. Yeah.
Okay. All right.
I've only played it a handful of times because it's a game that's too good to play.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's so good.
The Paradox games are great.
I mean, for Crusader Kings 2, I actually called in sick to work because I played it for 72 hours straight and I was like, I have to. So it ruins my life when I play that game. So it's one of my favorite games. I've only played like a handful of times because of that reason.
Excellent. Okay. Then I think you'll appreciate this metaphor because you already have the cognitive architecture in place. You can like, people should approach, no matter who you are, whether you're an individual with no influence or you're media superstar, you should approach, or you should have in your mind a conception of mimetic and ideological conflict, political, cultural conflict, and, you know, politics, as sort of like a game of Crusader Kings, where you're either the emperor and you have all these minor vassals, or you can start as a small feudal lord with one little, you know, barony or whatever. And so, like, you know, you got 126,000 subscribers, and so you could say you're a baron of Bohemia or something in the broader Holy Roman Empire or something like that, you know. And I'm, you know, in some other section with the smaller land, and then people watching are, you know, they might not have any title or something like that, but people do have influence. Like, I mean, ideological conflict occurs at the level of battlefield by battlefield, just like actual warfare does, right? So it's like, oh, well, it's the Soviet Union and Germany, these great powers clashing. It's like, yeah, but the actual war takes place at the level of like house-to-house combat. And so, you know, it's like, oh, well, I don't have influence in society. If, you know, someone's watching this, I don't have a social media following. It's like, yeah, but are you a respectable person at your workplace, because you can actually secure your workplace and you can push back against the HR department, and you've now just, you know, stopped the onslaught of a particular ideology while, you know, moving through your workplace. That actually matters. And so, you know, if with the feudal system, it's like, okay, if you're, you know, you might not have a huge amount of influence, but you can acquire some influence and you can acquire wealth. You know, you might not have any influence, but if you have a lot of money and you want to support the work of someone who is echoing your worldview, you're actually now, you know, you're like the Peter Thiel or George Soros of whatever ideology you serve. And so having that framework of like, it is all connected. Not every battle matters. Not every piece of land is relevant. Like every argument at the Thanksgiving dinner table, especially if it's just an emotional one, is not going to change the battle lines. Just like in real warfare, you know, people can fight in the trenches, lines will never move. But like, people should view themselves as minor feudal lords, and maybe, you know, when MAGA is starting to fray, you take you and your audience and go say, look, I'm joining the Tucker Chank coalition because these MAGA people are brain dead. And I see that as the dynamic, and social media facilitates that for sure.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I've done my little bit to try to, I'm quite excited by the Tucker Anna Kasparian.
Me too.
Alliance.
Very dark centrist, in my opinion.
Yeah. But you'll be surprised how dug in people are about not, you know, even if they're switched on, we can't ally with them for this reason and that reason. But people, that's because not everybody's a strategy gamer.
Correct. I'm telling you, again, a lot of my videos I do through the lens of like video game commentary. Like I'll you know, give commentary on a political figure through the lens of like video game terminology. And, you know, I just wrote an article yesterday on Substack. That works because it's taking advantage of the cognitive architecture you already have in your mind with all of the nuance, like understanding the hierarchy. You understand in Crusader Kings, you can start the game as either an emperor or the tiniest feudal lord. Yeah. And it's like the gameplay is different. And if you play as a minor feudal lord, you have to like identify the factions that are on the rise and align yourselves with them. And you can kind of help facilitate and all that. And immediately it invokes that framework you already have. Yeah. Interesting. What is the primary pushback against the Tucker Chank alliance?
I don't know. They find, you know, they'll find, the thing is though, is that it's in the current environment. I mean, this is one of the reasons I left Twitter, one of many reasons, but you don't always know how many comments are just bots or agitators in this day and age, right? You don't know how many people are there just kind of trying to disrupt there's an actual name for it. It's called consensus jacking or consensus block. You know, you basically try to disrupt a consensus that's forming in an audience by deliberately getting in there and arguing with people. You know, it's hard to say, but I, you know, generally speaking, there's been, because I've suggested some degree of left-right alliance, you know, on various different things before, but it's difficult, and it's made more difficult by the fact that no matter how switched on leftists can be on some issues, on other issues, they just completely shit the bed. Like, for example, this, you know, the Henry Novak thing that happened here, you know, they go back to their liberal priors on that, you know, or they don't see that issue for what it actually is. You know, some of them may understand it, but then it becomes, you know, because that's such a cardinal red line and because they've said something there, it then makes it impossible for your rank and file right winger to be like, well, how can I ally with this person who's basically telling me they're my mortal enemy? You know what I mean? So it's stuff like that. You know, the left need to understand the immigration issue is at this point very fundamental to, you know, and this I think is the hinge point that prevents the, you know, and there's a few other silly things like, you know, Tucker praised Muslims, right? Now, to me, that's nothing, but to some people, that was a red line. You know, it's silly stuff like this, but also it prevents a real obstacle.
Yeah, well, to your point about the rank and file, again, you know, the way I see it is like, you know, any individual is part of many different feudal hierarchies of influence, right? Because I could be a viewer of your channel, I could be a viewer of Tucker, I could be a viewer of 10 different... So that's another problem with the feudalism analogy, because within medieval feudalism, you were part of one hierarchy. In my sense, I'm borrowing the intersectional kind of framework a little bit, but an individual is at the intersection of many different feudal hierarchies. And so if you want to convince the rank and file, you need to convince the other influencers that the rank and file pays attention to. Because I'm sure you've experienced this, I'm sure everyone watching this have experienced this, of like, how many times have you encountered an idea for the first time that, you heard it and it immediately went out in one ear and out the other, because you're like, it's not like ridiculous, but it's just like, I'm not going to put any weight in that. And then weeks or months later, you hear someone that you really respect bring up that idea, and suddenly now you're interested in it, and then you look into it more. Yeah. It happens all the time. And so how do you convince the rake and file when you need to set up a situation where the rank and file is seen from multiple different feudal lords the same kind of message, and only then will it change. It's like, well, wait a minute, if this person's saying it, this person and this person is saying it, maybe there's more merit to it. You know, like Bernie Sanders 10 years ago, whatever, talking about taxing speculation. I remember it was like, oh, this is socialist nonsense. But it's like, okay, well, Bernie Sanders starts saying these things. Or maybe a better example would be like universal basic income. Oh, this is a socialist idea. It's like, well, you see Milton Friedman talking about a negative income tax, hyper-libertarian. So even if a hyper-libertarian is now advocating for something like it, that meme is now coming at you from different angles of attack. And it's more likely to then bypass your barriers. So the key is, how do you get other people, how do you get other minor feudal lords to recognize it? Not necessarily the rank and file. And so that's why, I mean, just generally speaking, the things that I'm most interested in is conversation, especially with people who don't like me, or not don't like me. Mm-hmm. Well, actually, I do enjoy that. That is actually fun. But people who have, on paper, very different commitments to me. Like, I've talked to FD Signifier, who's like a radical black Marxist. I've talked to Destiny. I've talked to Andrew Wilson. I've talked to Richard Hanani, all these people from different slices of life. And it's interesting to identify the points of agreement, or if it's not explicit points of agreement, identify the parts of their thinking that overlap. You know, like, it's like, you know, there's these liberal wine moms. They have a podcast. I'm sure you've seen clips. It's this like Southern woman. She's like super liberal. And, she's always shitting on Trump. Like, that's her whole bit. It's just MAGA, MAGA, MAGA is crazy. And one thing she said one time is like, you know, the thing that really like drives me is I grew up in the Christian South, and the amount of hypocrisy I saw in these churches, these Christians who were all like, Jesus is God, and then they were complete assholes in their private life. It's like, wait a minute, you don't really hate MAGA or Christianity. You just hate hypocrisy. Because that's exactly what all of the conservatives say, all these woke people who claim to be like super progressive and loving, and then they all turn on you or like hate white people or whatever. It's like, you guys hate the same thing, it just manifests differently. And a reasonable person can acknowledge, well, of course there's going to be hypocrisy in the Christian church, and of course there's going to be hypocrisy in the woke world. So it's like, if, you know, not that the liberal wine mom will ever convince her mind, she's got too many incentives, but like, that's an example of like, it's not that difficult to get people on the same page of like, don't, like, hypocrisy is the issue here, right? And surely you agree that there's some of it on your side. So I like the coalition building at the minor feudal lord level. I think that's the area of most productive attack.
All right. Well, this has been very interesting. Where can people find you?
P.F. Jung on YouTube. P.F. Jung, J-U-N-G, like Carl Jung.
And I'll put you in the, I'll make sure that's in the show notes so that people can find you. Did you get into Jung through Peterson?
Through Peterson, yes, indeed.
Yeah. Okay. And I'll remind people, pick up courses at the Academic Agency. Trivium, the bestseller there. I should mention, I do have these two other channels. If you're into Peterson, you might be interested in this second one here, because it's called Academic Agent Mindset. I've got a gaming one, a smaller gaming
one. I was going to say, that one sounds interesting to me. If you got Crusader Kings playthroughs on there.
Yeah, so, I mean, you could check out the gaming one, but the mindset one is, you know, I'm trying to do my little bit as a minor feudal lord, whatever small influence I have, to try to bring people up a bit you know, to actually do some of the, because I, you know, I agree, some of the Jordan Peterson stuff back in the day, go out and clean your room and so on. How do you get, I mean, I've called it my Ride the Tiger series, but how do you embody your best self? How do you, you know, self-actualize? How do you survive in the face of modernity and so on? So I'm giving a lot of practical, like, I guess, like self-help stuff on that channel, but I've been surprised by how many people have appreciated it. So, you know, I talk about what, you know, the necessity of keeping journals and how that can help you and things like that. So yeah, check that out. Check out PF Young. Lovely to meet you. And most importantly of all, friends, get out. If you liked this video, be sure to like and subscribe. You can join the channel for thousands of hours of past shows in the archive and hundreds of videos. If you have any questions, you can leave a super chat or a super thanks, and I'll be sure to pick it up during my weekly office hours, which run every Tuesday afternoon. I also provide courses at the academic agency, which I encourage people to buy. Thousands of students now have taken the Trivium to improve their skills in writing, logic, and rhetoric. Just 3 of many courses available. Buy it now. But most importantly of all, friends, get out.